Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is here, although he's on the phone today, joining us from New York City, where he's going to appear on CNN International later today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We are sponsored today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. We have, how do you even describe the good one? I guess it's still good that Neil Gorsuch is the nominee, and he's probably going to get confirmed. We also have bad and crazy. The first one, though, is just bizarre. But Democrats in confirmation hearings for Republican nominees have been bizarre for a good 30 years now, thanks to Ted Kennedy and other Democrats. Today is the first official day of actual Q&A for Neil Gorsuch. He had the lovely opportunity yesterday to just hear senators blather on for several hours before giving his opening statement. I'm sure he loved every minute of that. Today he actually heard from the senators, and still is right now. Chuck Grassley is the chairman. Dianne Feinstein of California, the ranking Democrat. Last night, after the opening statements from everyone, including Gorsuch, Ben Sasse was on Special Report with Brett Baer and basically said, from what we can see right now, there's no good reason other than politics for anyone to vote against Neil Gorsuch.
The reality is there's a guy in front of us now who knows what a judge's job is, and he should be confirmed. And frankly, I think he should be confirmed 100-0. And I think there are a bunch of Dems who want to vote against him because of their own politics and their own partisanship and their own concern about their base. But it's hard to figure out what any of their actual substantive arguments are against the guy as a judge who would be upholding the Constitution.
Well, Dianne Feinstein thinks she might have found one. She's made up the word super precedent, and of course, it applies to Roe v. Wade. Here's the exchange between Feinstein and Gorsuch earlier this morning.
Since we're on Roe, I wasn't going to begin with this, but I well recall the time we spent in my office, and we talked about precedent, and in my opening remarks, I indicated that if anything had super precedent, Roe did in terms of the numbers, and I've put that in the record. Do you view Roe as having super precedent?
Well, Senator, I super precedent is a
in numbers. 44.
It has been reaffirmed many times. I can say that. Yes.
Yes, dozens.
Yeah. Super precedent, Jim. It used to be settled law. When people want to be fancy, they use stare decisis to suggest that we're at the point now where you can never, ever overturn this law because it's really important to our base. Gorsuch, I think, deftly handled it. I'm sure Feinstein will still be a no. But now we're making up new words here, it seems, to try and satisfy Planned Parenthood and others who weren't very happy with the Democrats not being intense enough in their hostility to Neil Gorsuch.
You know, Greg, there are a couple of ways I could go with this. I actually went back and looked in the history, and I believe it was the philosopher Nietzsche who said that once a precedent breaks the bounds of slave morality and limits, it rises from the precedent to the uber precedent. that's my really good obscure philosopher humor there between mensch and ubermensch. Or we can go a little more contemporary and just observe that when a precedent hears that someone is in trouble with its super hearing, it runs to a phone booth and puts on its costume to be super precedent. And then as super precedent, it can save the day. You know, super precedent is just another word for a precedent I really like. And thus, I never, ever want to see somebody contradicting this. You can look over the Supreme Court's history. And there were a lot of things that were considered precedent for a long time, not only to slavery, but segregation. You know, a precedent is a precedent until the day comes along when a bunch of the Supreme Court says, you know, this really doesn't make sense. This doesn't really hold with our understanding of the Constitution. Maybe previous courts have upheld this, but deep down it really shouldn't be like this. And it overturns it. And there is, you know, there's no such thing, unless it comes down on a stone tablet, you know, or it's in the Constitution. There's really not something that you can say, oh, because this is precedent, it can never, ever, 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 ever be overturned. And basically this kind of represents, I suspect, Feinstein just looking for anything to say, well, sure, he says he respects the law, but will he respect the super precedent? And because nobody really knows what a super precedent is, other than what Dianne Feinstein feels like on any given day, that's easier to say, oh, well, I've determined he won't meet my standards. The second thing is, that kind of jumps out of that is that it was a great exchange where she accused him of not standing up for the little guy. And just with no notes, nothing in front of him, Judge Gorsuch rattles off like 18 cases where he stood with the little guy. And his point is that not that he decides to choose with the little guy or with the corporation or one side or the other. Neil Gorsuch decides based on the law. And some days he's going to look at the law and he's going to say the little guy is the one who's in the right here. Then some days he's going to look at the corporation or the larger entity and say they're on the right side here. This is the whole point. We talked about this earlier in the week of the statue of justice is supposed to be blind. It's not supposed to be about which side do you like better? Which side are you more personally attached to or do you favor because of past experience? You're supposed to look at the law and the facts. So just another good day of Neil Gorsuch and, you know, an administration where a lot of things have not gone right. This is one part of the administration agenda that is revving like the engine of a Ferrari Testarossa.
Yeah, very well put. And he seems to be unflappable at this point. And I'm sure the Democrats will be firing shots at him for the next 2 days, and we'll see how he does. But so far, his demeanor and his ability to defend his record has been very, very impressive. Let's move on to something that's not at all impressive in our bad martini, and that is the role of the Veterans Affairs Department. This is courtesy of John Sexton over at Hot Air. The Inspector General for the Department of Veterans Affairs released a report Monday which found needed improvements to a suicide hotline for veterans have not been made. The report said many veterans who called the hotline were being routed to overflow call centers, and some were being placed in a queue for up to 30 minutes waiting for their call to be answered. The Veterans Crisis Line was established in 2007 and answers roughly 500,000 calls a year. The goal was to have no more than 10% of calls routed to overflow call centers, but in fact the rate was nearly 30% as recently as last November. The chart from the rollover rate from April through November shows 28.4% of calls rolled over. It got as high in October as almost 35%. And obviously, when veterans are depressed or dealing with PTSD or contemplating suicide, a 30-minute wait can make a big, big difference. The report goes on to say that the reason the high rollover rate is a problem is that callers were sent to two of the overflow call centers, and they're being placed in a queue that where they could be left waiting for up to 30 minutes for their call to be answered. Conveniently, the staff did not consider this to be the equivalent of being on hold because no one had yet answered the phone. Jim, if this...
don't worry, they're not on hold. It's just ringing.
Jim, if this were just typical government bureaucracy, it would be frustrating enough. But the lives of our heroes are on the lines here, and the fact that they're not making the needed changes here is just infuriating.
Yeah, you can only imagine being in that circumstance, and the caring, understanding voice you hear is, your call is important to us. Please stay on the line, and it will be answered in turn. I'm curious as to what our listeners think about when it's okay to start expecting a serious improvement in the VA. I understand maybe there's a little bit of a improvement from those October, November numbers, but it doesn't sound like it was a very dramatic movement in the right direction. Look, you know, this is a big promise of the Trump administration. I realize they've only been on the job close to 60 days. I think one of the other reasons that I'm a little wary about the Trump administration and kind of where things are going to, how quickly things are changing the VA is that there was a lot of talk during the Trump transition that the president would pick somebody like Pete Hegseth. Concerned Veterans for America had put together pretty much a really concrete, specific plan about how to fix the VA. And he went with their current deputy administrator. Now, maybe that person is exactly the person who already understands all the problems, understands it inside out, and has been held up from implementing the kinds of reforms he wants to. Or maybe this is meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Obviously, we've got to give him a little bit of time, but if you don't see pretty significant improvements in a year, it just seems reasonable to complain. This certainly should be a high priority for the administration. I think it was a great symbolism, a great symbol of how the Obama administration made bold promises about how government would work better and then completely fell down on the job. You know, Trump was able to point to this as a giant, glaring failure. If they can't improve that, then, the Trump administration is going to find itself in pretty serious trouble pretty quickly. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect dramatic improvements in this area, and something like the suicide hotline would seem like one of the first places you would start. So maybe it's too soon to judge completely, but I don't think it's unreasonable to expect to want to see pretty significant improvements in the VA as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, overhauling a massive bureaucracy like the VA is going to be a Herculean effort. But as you just said, this shouldn't be that hard. Just hire some more people. And yes, it's a good transition into ZipRecruiter. But really, this is a very simple plan. Hire more people, add on a few phone lines, and bring this number down. Because waiting that long is not only horrific, it's tragic, perhaps, in some cases. So are you hiring at the VA or elsewhere? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you've got to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies, as well as thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. It works for everyone. It streamlines the process. People find the right hire much faster than they did in the old days. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And, you know, ZipRecruiter is a good tool not only for hiring people so you have them on staff to deal with our heroes in uniform and our veterans who are dealing with some serious issues. You also might want to use it when you are looking for people to host talk shows. And that's the situation going on over at The Blaze. For those of you who don't necessarily watch The Blaze or even have the opportunity to watch The Blaze or some of these other conservative networks that are in the early growth stages, you might want to say, like One America News or Newsmax and so forth. One America News basically hired a young lady out of college, I think directly out of college, Tommy Lauren. She became pretty famous for her viral closing thoughts, and as a result, she got hired over at The Blaze. She was very, very critical of President Obama on a number of fronts, and she quickly became a very strong advocate for President Trump during the 2016 campaign. I didn't watch her enough to know whether she was on board with Trump for most of the primaries or just once he pretty much locked up the nomination. Nonetheless, she has had her show suspended by The Blaze for a week as a result of comments she made at the end of last week while a guest on The View as it relates to conservatism and abortion. Here's the question, and here's Tommy Lauren's response.
You call yourself a conservative, a conservative Republican and a constitutional conservative, but you also consider yourself pro-choice, which is interesting to me because 68% of conservative Republicans think that abortion should be illegal across the board.
No, I'm pro-choice, and here's why. I am a constitutional, you know, someone that loves the Constitution. I am someone that's for limited government, and so I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and say I'm for limited government, but I think that the government should decide what women do with their bodies. I can sit here and say that as a Republican, and I can say, you know what, I'm for limited government, so stay out of my guns. And you can stay out of my body as well.
And, of course, that got a lot of applause, and Joy Behar and the rest of the ladies on The View exhaled and said, oh, well, maybe you're not evil after all. They didn't say it exactly that way. So there was a backlash. There were people who wrote columns that pointed out how being pro-life and being conservative are very much intellectually consistent. After all, we are champions of the individual, and the right to life is a major cog in that. Jim, you and I have talked about the desire, and for some reason it happens on the right more than the left, to elevate people into star status on the right before they're of an age where it's appropriate. Tommy Lauren is still only 24 years old. She's just out of college when she got the position over at One America News. And she was basically hired because she's good at doing these rants at the end of her show. And so Glenn Beck gave her a job, and now he's stunned, apparently, that he didn't know she was pro-choice. So, A, do your homework. And B, maybe not hire 22-year-olds to host national TV shows.
Yeah, and let's observe. Let's put aside our obvious bias in favor of 40-something guys as the most natural, most talented, just the apex of your career for that sort of thing. Look, I imagine everybody who'd been watching Ms. Lauren throughout all this is probably that moment where your friend suddenly says, you know, I actually think O.J. is innocent. Or your friend just suddenly says, there's definitely alien bodies in Area 51. It's totally true. I've seen this documentary. They completely dissected it back in 47 after the Roswell crash. And you all of a sudden, somebody who you thought you knew has a belief that just doesn't line up with everything else you thought you knew about him. People react that way when I tell them I'm a Jets fan all the time. But in this case, I wrote about this a bit in the morning, Joel. Look, if she's still kind of sorting out how she sees the world, and, you know, she's kind of been identifying as a conservative, and maybe her worldview is better described as libertarian, that's fine. Look, you know, not everybody comes out in their mid-20s with a fully formed political philosophy, and it's perfectly fine to alter your views as you learn or learn, you know, as you study more about the world, think about these things. It is worth noting that she did a commentary on The Blaze in December of 2016, in fact, towards the end of December 2016, which I think any reasonable person would have concluded she was pro-life. So what's more is not just the because a lot of people said, oh, is she losing her show or being temporarily suspended for expressing a viewpoint that Glenn Beck disagrees with? It certainly seems like more of the issue is that she's saying one thing to one audience and then something completely contradictory to another audience. And, you know, that obviously rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Look, you know, I hope Tommy Lauren goes off and lives a long, healthy life and has a, you know, wonderful, successful career. But ultimately, as you mentioned, this reference to this the story in One America News Network, you're really not supposed to get hired out of college to do an on-camera hosting gig. You really need time to learn about the world. And the irony is, if 22-year-old Jim Garrity was on this program, he'd be saying, this is nonsense. I'm totally ready. I know everything I need to know. And the problem is you don't realize this until later on in life. And that's the reason why most people start out on the bottom and they work their way up and you pay your dues and you do the grunt work and you're running around fetching coffee or putting toner in the photocopier for other people at a news bureau. But that's how you gradually learn these things. You cover things like the National Spelling Bee. You don't get the big glamour job in front of the cameras because people can, you know, rightfully ask, well, why should we care what she thinks? And the answer is, unless you're really articulate, unless you make a really unique, compelling, engrossing way of making that argument, people are going to tune you out. I think a lot of people are kind of asking, you know, was there some justification? Why is she here as a representative of conservatism on this relatively apolitical morning chat show, or I guess maybe it's an afternoon chat show, The View? Why her? There's already a lot of suspicion amongst conservatives that the mainstream media doesn't pick the best choices. They pick the people who are either extraordinarily reasonable and never actually disagree with the liberal conventional wisdom, David Brooks, or whether they pick somebody who's the single most unappealing figure they can find, Alex Jones ranting about the chemicals in the water turning the frogs gay. Those are probably the two best and most extreme examples. But, you know, there are a lot of times where you've seen somebody who's the designated conservative on one of these panels, and you're like, oh, this guy's terrible. Now, hopefully people don't say that today on CNN International. I'm sure there are plenty of people who look at me as being not the, you know, the most eloquent or perfectly shining representative of the conservative cause. But the point is that ideally, be careful what you wish for, and that ultimately you really don't want to have an extraordinary opportunity in front of the whole wide world handed to you fresh out of college or very early in your career. Seasoning does everybody some good. And, you know, there's a reason they have the minor leagues in baseball. It's not a failure. It's not a reflection of you. It's you need the time to develop your skills to get good at that. So that's my little The More You Know NBC life lesson moment to close the podcast with today.
Well, we don't know for sure, Jim, that she's going to lose the show. She's been suspended for a week. No new shows for a week. What do you make of the decision to suspend? As you said before, it could be about consistency rather than holding an opposing view. But a lot of folks are wondering now, why not just have her bring folks on to confront The View or have a vigorous debate rather than punishing her like that?
Okay, I have no inside sources at The Blaze. I'm entirely speculating here. I just kind of figure you have to figure that the folks at The Blaze watch that clip and say, huh? Wait, what? You know, but it's not merely, oh, I still support a legal right to abortion or I think abortion should be safe, legal, or rare. Implied in her comments is the suggestion that pro-life conservatives are hypocrites, that yes, by seeking to ban abortion, they're somehow fair-weather friends of smaller government, which is a really, I'm going to say it's a basic unfair reading of the philosophy of pro-life. It's the sort of thing Michael Kinsley would say. Michael Kinsley was constantly full of this, well, if pro-lifers were really consistent, then they would be bombing in vitro fertilization clinics and stuff like that. No, that's not really how we think. That's not really how we operate. And it kind of shows you're completely misunderstanding the whole thing. So I don't think there's anything wrong with the folks at the Blaze taking, you know, calling time out and saying, okay, Tommy, what do you really stand for? what do you want this show about? What do you think should be there? So they can hopefully avoid these sorts of things where they have one of their guests go off onto another network and say things that seem to completely contradict what she was saying on their network. That seems to me like the most sensible approach here. I'm not calling for her head or anything like that. But I think that's really, when you're 24 years old and you're in front of the camera, people are going to be a little skeptical about how well-versed you are and how the world works. And maybe fair, it may not be fair. But obviously, you want to avoid moments like this where you know, hand your critics a very easy stick to hit you with. This is not an endorsement of hitting her with a stick, by the way.
Good clarification. I think we should bring back the more you know. I think they stopped doing that. And Jim, you'd be the perfect one to host that.
There you go. You know, every time a senator asks you a question, say, sure, Senator, whatever you say. The more you know.
Love it. Oh, I think that'd be a great hit. Jim, good luck up in New York. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter. Right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.